I just had to pause to dispose of his monstrosity of a sword. Dent, come back here. You didn't hire me, little man, the first voice said, growing fainter. If you want to make me do something, go get your boss. Until then, you know where to find me. Silence. And then, something moved behind Lightsong. He spun, and could just barely make out Larimar creeping forward. Lightsong waved him back, then joined him. What? Larimar whispered. Voices ahead, Lightsong whispered back, the tunnel dark around them, talking about the war. Who were they? Larimar asked. I don't know, Lightsong whispered, but I'm going to find out. Wait here while I... He was interrupted by a loud scream. Lightsong jumped. The sound came from the same place he had heard the voices, and it sounded like... Let go of me! Blushweaver yelled. What do you think you're doing? I'm a goddess! Lightsong stood up abruptly. A voice said something back to Blushweaver, but Lightsong was too far down the tunnel to make out the words. You will let me go, Blushweaver yelled. I... She cut off sharply, crying out in pain. Lightsong's heart was pounding. He took a step. Your grace, Larimar said, standing. We should go for help. We are help, Lightsong said. He took a deep breath. Then, surprising himself, he charged down the tunnel. He quickly approached the light, rounding a corner and coming into a section of tunnel that had been worked with rock. In seconds, he was running on a smooth stone floor and burst into what appeared to be a dungeon. Blushweaver was tied into a chair. A group of men wearing the robes of the God King's priests stood around her with several uniformed soldiers. Blushweaver's lip was bleeding, and she was crying through a gag that had been placed over her mouth. She wore a beautiful nightgown, but it was dirty and disheveled. The men in the room looked up in surprise, obviously shocked to see someone come up behind them. Lightsong took advantage of this shock and threw his shoulder against the soldier nearest to him. He sent the man flying back into the wall, Lightsong's superior size and weight knocking him aside with ease. Lightsong knelt down and quickly pulled the fallen soldier's sword from its sheath. Aha! Lightsong said, pointing the weapon at the men in front of him. Who's first? The soldiers regarded him dumbly. I say you, Lightsong said, lunging at the next closest guard. He missed the man by a good 3 inches, fumbling and off balance from the lunge. The guard finally realized what was going on and pulled out his own sword. The priests backed against the wall. Blushweaver blinked through her tears, looking shocked. The soldier nearest Lightsong attacked, and Lightsong raised his blade awkwardly, trying to block, doing a horrible job of it. The guard at his feet suddenly threw himself at Lightsong's legs, toppling him to the ground. Then one of the standing guards thrust his sword into Lightsong's thigh. The leg bled blood as red as that of any mortal. Suddenly, Lightsong knew pain. Pain literally greater than any he'd known in his short life. He screamed. He saw, through tears, Larimar heroically trying to tackle a guard from behind, but the attack was almost as poorly executed as Lightsong's own. The soldiers stepped away, several guarding the tunnel, another holding his bloodied blade toward Lightsong's throat. Funny, Lightsong thought, gritting his teeth against the pain. That was not at all how I imagined this going. Chapter 53. Vivenna waited up for Vasher. He didn't return. She paced in the small one-room hideout, the sixth in a series. They never spent more than a few days in each location. Unadorned, it held only their bedrolls, Vasher's pack, and a single flickering candle. Vasher would have chastised her for wasting the candle. For a man who held a king's fortune in breaths, he was surprisingly frugal. She continued pacing. She knew that she should probably just go to sleep. Vasher could take care of himself. It seemed that the only one in the city who couldn't do that was Vivenna. And yet he told her he was only going on a quick scouting mission. Though he was a solitary person himself, he apparently understood her desire to be a part of things, so he usually let her know where he was going and when to expect him back. She'd never waited up for Denth to come back from a night mission, and she'd been working for Vasher for a fraction of the time she'd spent with the mercenaries. Why did she worry so much now? Though she had felt like she was Denth's friend, she hadn't really cared about him. He'd been amusing and charming, but distant. Vasher was, well, who he was. There was no guile in him. He wore no false mask. She'd only met one other person like that. Her sister. The one who would bear the God King's child. Lord of Colors, Vivenna thought, still pacing. How did things turn into such a mess? Ciri awoke with a start. There was shouting coming from outside her room. She roused herself quickly, moving over to the door and putting her ear to it. She could hear fighting. If she were going to run, perhaps now would be the time. She rattled the door, hoping for some reason that it was unlocked. It wasn't. She cursed. She'd heard fighting earlier, screaming and men dying. And now again. Someone trying to rescue me, perhaps? She thought hopefully. But who? The door shook suddenly, and she jumped back as it opened. Trelides, high priest of the God King, stood in the doorway. Quickly, child, he said, waving to her. You must come with me. Ciri looked desperately for a way to run. She backed away from the priest, and he cursed quietly, waving for a couple of soldiers in the city guard uniforms to rush in and grab her. She screamed for help. Quiet, you fool, Trelides said. We're trying to help you. His lies rang hollow in her ears, and she struggled as the soldiers pulled her from the room. Outside, bodies were lying on the ground, some in guard uniforms, others in nondescript armor, still others with gray skin. She heard fighting down the hallway, and she screamed toward it as the soldiers roughly pulled her away. Old Chaps, they called him. Those who called him anything, that is. He sat in his little boat, moving slowly across the dark water of the bay. Night fishing. During the day, one had to pay a fee to fish into Teller waters. Well, technically, during the night you were supposed to pay, too. But the thing about night was, nobody could see you. Old Chaps chuckled to himself, lowering his net over the side of the boat. The waters made their characteristic lap, lap, lap against the side of the boat. Dark. He liked it dark. Lap, lap, lap. Occasionally, he was given better work, taking bodies from one of the city slumlords, weighting them down with rocks tied in a sack to the foot, then tossing them into the bay. There were probably hundreds of them down there, floating in the current with their feet weighted to the floor. A party of skeletons having a dance. Dance, dance, dance. No bodies tonight, though. Too bad. That meant fish. Free fish he didn't have to pay tariffs on. And free fish were good fish. No, a voice said to him. A little bit more to your right. The sea talked to him sometimes, coaxed him this way or that. He happily made his way in the direction indicated. He was out on the waters almost every night. They should know him pretty well by now. Good. Drop the net. He did so. It wasn't too deep in this part of the bay. He could drag the net behind his boat, pulling the weighted edges along the bottom, catching the smaller fish that came up into the shallows to feed. Not the best fish, but the sky was looking too dangerous to be out far from the shore. A storm brewing? His net struck something. He grumbled, yanking it. Sometimes it got caught on debris or coral. It was heavy. Too heavy. He pulled the net back up over the side, then opened the shield on his lantern, risking a bit of light. Tangled in the net, a sword lay in the bottom of his boat, silvery, with a black handle. Lap, lap, lap. Ah, very nice, the voice said, much clearer now. I hate the water. It's so wet and icky down there. Transfixed, old Chaps reached out, picking up the weapon. It felt heavy in his hand. I don't suppose you'd want to go destroy some evil, would you? The voice said. I'm not really sure what that means, to be honest. I'll just trust you to decide. Old Chaps smiled. Oh, all right, the sword said. You can admire me a little bit longer if you must. After that, though, we really need to get back to shore. Vasher awoke, groggily. He was tied by his wrists to a hook in the ceiling of a stone room. The rope that had been used to tie him, he noticed, was the same one he'd used to tie up the maid. It had been completely drained of color. In fact, everything around him was a uniform gray. He had been stripped, saved for his short, white underbreeches. He groaned, his arms feeling numb from the awkward angle of being hung by his wrists. He wasn't gagged, but he had no breath left. He'd used the last of it in the fight to awaken the cloak of the fallen man. He groaned. A lantern burned in the corner. A figure stood next to it. And so we both return, Dent said quietly. Vasher didn't reply. I still owe you for Arsteel's death, too, Dent said quietly. I want to know how you killed him.
In a duel,
Vasher said in a croaking voice. You didn't beat him in a duel, Vasher, Dent said, stepping forward. I know it.
Then maybe I snuck up and stabbed him from behind,
Vasher said.
It's what he deserved.
Dent backhanded him across the face, causing him to swing from the hook. Arsteel was a good man.
Once,
Vasher said, tasting blood.
Once. We were all good men, Dent. Once.
Dent was quiet. You think your little quest here will undo what you've done?
Better than becoming a mercenary,
Vasher said,
working for whomever will pay.
I am what you made me, Dent said quietly.
That girl trusted you, Vivenna.
Dent turned, eyes darkened, the lantern light not quite reaching his face. She was supposed to.
She liked you. Then you killed her friend.
Things got a little out of hand.
They always do with you,
Vasher said. Dent raised an eyebrow, his face growing amused in the wan light. I get out of hand, Vasher? Me? When's the last time I started a war? Slaughtered tens of thousands. You're the one who betrayed his closest friend and killed the woman who loved him. Vasher didn't respond. What argument could he offer? that Shashara had needed to die? It had been bad enough that she'd revealed the commands to make lifeless from a single breath. What if the way of making awakened steel, like Nightblood, had entered the Many War? Undead monsters slaughtering people with awakened swords thirsting for blood? None of that mattered to a man who'd seen his sister murdered by Vasher's hand. Besides, Vasher knew he had little credibility to stand on. He'd created his own monsters to fight in that war. Not awakened steel like Nightblood, but deadly enough in their own right. "I was going to let Tonk Fa have you," Dent said, turning away again. "He likes hurting things. It's a weakness he has. We all have weaknesses. With my direction, he's been able to restrict it to animals." Denth turned to him, holding up a knife. "I've always wondered what he finds so enjoyable about causing pain." Dawn was approaching. Vivenna threw off her blanket, unable to sleep. She dressed, frustrated, but not sure why. Vasher was probably just fine. He was likely out carousing somewhere. "Of course," she thought wryly, "carousing. That sounds just like him." He'd never stayed out an entire night before. Something had gone wrong. She slowed as she pulled on her belt, glancing over at Vasher's pack and the change of clothing he had inside of it. "Every single thing I've tried since I left Idris has failed miserably," she thought, continuing to dress. "I failed as a revolutionary, I failed as a beggar, and I failed as a sister. What am I supposed to do? Find him? I don't even know where to start." She looked away from the pack. Failure. It wasn't something she'd been accustomed to, back in Idris. Everything she'd done there had turned out well. "Maybe that's what this is all about," she thought, sitting. "My hatred of Halandrin, my insistence on saving Ciri, on taking her place." When her father had chosen Ciri over her, it had been the first time in her life she'd felt that she wasn't good enough. So she'd come to Teteller, determined to prove the problem wasn't with her. It had been with someone else, anything else, as long as Vivenna wasn't flawed. But Halandrin had repeatedly proved that she was flawed. And now that she'd tried and failed so often, she found it hard to act. By choosing to act, she might fail. And that was so daunting that doing nothing seemed preferable. It was the crowning arrogance in Vivenna's life. She bowed her head. One last bit of feathered hypocrisy to adorn her royal hair. "You want to be competent?" she thought. "You want to learn to be in control of what goes on around you, rather than just being pushed around? Then you'll have to learn to deal with failure." It was frightening, but she knew it was true. She stood up and walked over to Vasher's pack. She pulled out a wrinkled overshirt and a pair of leggings. Both had tassels hanging from the cuffs. Vivenna put them on. Vasher's spare cloak followed. It smelled like him, and was cut, like his other one, into the vague shape of a man. She understood at least one of the reasons his clothing looked so tattered. She pulled out a couple of colorful handkerchiefs. "Protect me," she commanded the cloak, imagining it grabbing people who tried to attack her. She placed a hand on the sleeve of the shirt. "Upon call," she commanded, "become my fingers and grip that which I must." She'd only heard Vasher give the command a couple of times, and she still wasn't quite sure how to visualize what she wanted the shirt to do. She imagined the tassels closing around her hands as she had seen them do for Vasher. She awakened the leggings, commanding them to strengthen her legs. The leg tassels began to twist, and she raised each foot in turn, letting the tassels wrap around the bottoms. Her stance felt firmer, the leggings pulled tight against her skin. Finally, she tied on the sword Vasher had given her. She still didn't know how to use it, though she could hold it properly. It felt right to bring it. Then she left. Light Song had rarely seen a goddess cry.
"It wasn't supposed to go this way,"
Blushweaver said, heedless of the tears streaming down her cheeks.
"I had things under control."
The dungeon beneath the God King's palace was a cramped room. Cages, like the kind that might be used for animals, lined both walls. They were large enough to hold a god. Light Song couldn't decide if that was just a coincidence. Blushweaver sniffled.
"I thought I had the God King's priesthood on my side. We were working together."
"Something's wrong about this," Light Song thought, glancing at the group of priests chatting anxiously at the side of the room. Larimar sat in his own cage, the one next to Light Song's, head bowed. Light Song looked back at Blushweaver.
"How long?"
he asked. "How long were you working with them?"
"From the beginning," Blushweaver said. "I was supposed to get the command phrases. We came up with a plan together."
"Why did they turn on you?" She shook her head, glancing down.
"They claimed I didn't do my part, that I was withholding things from them."
"Were you?" She looked away, eyes tear-stained. She looked very odd, sitting in her cell, a beautiful woman of deific proportions, wearing a delicate silk gown, sitting on the ground, surrounded by bars, crying. "We have to get out of here," Light Song thought. He crawled over to the bars, separating his cage from Larimar's, ignoring the pain of his thigh. "Scoot," he hissed. "Scoot." Larimar glanced up. He looked haggard. "What does one use to pick a lock?" Light Song asked. Larimar blinked.
"What?"
"Pick a lock," Light Song said, pointing. "Maybe I'll discover that I know how to do it, if I get my hands into the right position. I still haven't figured out why my swordsmanship skills were so poor. But surely I can do this, if I can only remember what to use." Larimar stared at him. "Maybe I..." Light Song began.
"What is wrong with you?"
Larimar whispered. Light Song paused.
"What is wrong with you?"
Larimar bellowed, standing.
"You were a scribe, Light Song. A colors cursed scribe. Not a soldier, not a detective, not a thief. You were an accountant for a local moneylender."
"What?" Light Song thought.
"You were as much an idiot then as you are now,"
Larimar shouted.
"Don't you ever think about what you're going to do before you just saunter off and do it? Why can't you just stop occasionally and ask yourself if you're being a complete fool or not? I'll give you a hint. The answer is usually yes."
Light Song stumbled back from the bars, shocked. Larimar. Larimar was yelling.
"And every time,"
Larimar said, turning away,
"I get in trouble with you. Nothing has changed. You become a god, and I still end up in prison."
The heavy priest slumped down, breathing in deep gasps, shaking his head in obvious frustration. Blushweaver was staring at them, and so were the priests. "What is it I find odd about them?" Light Song thought, trying to sort out his thoughts and emotions as the group of priests approached.
"Light Song,"
one of them said, stooping down beside his cage. "We need your command phrases."
He snorted.
I'm sorry to say that I've forgotten them. You probably know my reputation for being weak-minded. I mean, what kind of fool would come charging in here and get himself captured so easily?
He smiled at them. The priest by his cage sighed, then waved a hand at the others. They unlocked Blushweaver's cage and pulled her out. She yelled and fought, and Lightsong smiled at the trouble she gave them. Yet there were 6 priests, and they finally managed to get her out. Then one got out a knife and slit her throat. The shock of the moment hit Lightsong like a physical force. He froze, eyes wide, watching in horror as the red blood spilled out the front of Blushweaver's throat, staining her beautiful nightgown. Far more disturbing was the look of panicked terror in her eyes. Such beautiful eyes. No! Lightsong screamed, slamming against the bars, reaching helplessly toward her. He strained his godly muscles, pressing himself against the steel as he felt his body begin to shake. It was useless. Even a perfect body couldn't push its way through the steel. You bastards! He yelled. You colors-cursed bastards! He struggled, pounding the bars with one hand as Blushweaver's eyes began to dim. And then her biochroma faded, like a blazing bonfire dimming down to a single candle. It puffed out. No, Lightsong said, sliding down to his knees, numb. The priest regarded him.
So you did care for her, he said. I'm sorry that we had to do that.
He knelt down, solemn. However, Lightsong, we decided that we had to kill her so that you would understand that we're serious.
I do know your reputation, and I know that you usually take things lightheartedly. That is a fine attribute to have in many situations. Right now, you must realize how dangerous things are. We have shown you that we will kill. If you don't do as we ask, others will die.
Bastard,
Lightsong whispered. I need your command phrases, the priest said. This is important. More important than you can understand.
You can beat them out of me,
Lightsong growled, feeling rage slowly overwhelm his shock. No, the priest said, shaking his head. We're actually new to all of this. We don't know how to torture very well, and it would take too much time to force you to talk that way. Those who are skilled at torture aren't being very cooperative right now. Never pay a mercenary before the job is done.
The priest waved, and the others left Blushweaver's corpse on the ground. Then they moved to Larimar's cage.
No! Lightsong screamed. We are serious, Lightsong, the man said. Very, very serious. We know how much you care for your high priest. You now know that we will kill him if you don't do as we say.
Why? Lightsong said. What is this even about? The God King you serve could order us to move the armies if he wanted to. We'd listen to him. Why do you care so much about those command phrases?
The priests forced Larimar from his cage, then pushed him to his knees. One put a knife to his throat.
Red Panther!
Lightsong yelled, weeping.
That's the command phrase. Please, leave him be.
The priest nodded to the others, and they put Larimar back in his cell. They left Blushweaver's corpse on the ground, face down in the blood.
I hope that you haven't lied to us, Light Song. The main priest said, we're not playing games. It would be unfortunate if we discovered that you still are. He shook his head. We are not cruel men, but we are working for something very important. Do not test us. With that, he left. Light Song barely noticed. He was still staring at Blushweaver, trying to convince himself that he was hallucinating, or that she was faking, or that something would change to make him realize that it was all just an elaborate scam.
Please,
he whispered.
Please, no.
Chapter 54. What's the word on the street, Tuft? Vivenna asked, sidling up to a beggar. He snorted, holding out his cup to those few who passed in the early light. Tuft was always one of the first to arrive in the mornings.
What do I care?
He said. Come on, Vivenna said. You kicked me out of this spot on 3 different occasions. I figure you owe me something.
I don't owe nobody nothing, he said,
squinting at the passerby with his one eye. The other eye was simply an empty hole. He didn't wear a patch.
Particularly, don't owe you nothing, he said. You were a plant all the time, not a real beggar.
Vivenna paused. I wasn't a plant, Tuft. I just thought I should know what it was like.
Huh?
Living among you, she said. I figured your life couldn't be easy, but I couldn't know, not really know, until I tried it for myself. So I came to the streets, determined to live here for a time.
Foolish thing to do.
No, she said. The fools are those who pass, without even thinking about what it must be like to live like you. Maybe if they knew, they'd give you something. She reached into her pocket, pulling out one of the bright handkerchiefs. She placed one in the cup. I don't have any coins, but I know you can sell that. He grunted, eyeing it.
What do you mean by word on the street?
Disturbances, Vivenna said. Ones that are out of the ordinary, perhaps involving awakeners.
Go to the 3rd dock slums, Tuft said. Look around the buildings near the wharf. Maybe you'll find what you're looking for there.
Light peeked through the window.
Morning already,
Vasher thought, head down, still hanging by his wrists. He knew what to expect from torture. He was not new to it. He knew how to scream, how to give the torturer what he wanted. He knew how to not expend his strength in resisting too much. He also knew that none of that was likely to do any good. How would he be after a week of torture? Blood dripped down his chest, staining his undershorts. A dozen small pains nagged at his skin, cuts that had been drenched in lemon juice. Denth stood with his back facing Vasher, bloodied knives on the ground around him. Vasher looked up, forcing a smile.
Not as much fun as you thought it would be, is it, Denth?
Denth didn't turn.
There's still a good man in there,
Vasher thought,
even after all these years. He's just been beaten down, bloodied, cut up worse than I have been. Torturing me won't bring her back,
Vasher said. Denth turned, eyes dark.
No, it won't.
He picked up another knife. The priests pushed Ciri through the passageways of the palace. They occasionally passed corpses in the dark black hallways, and she could still hear fighting in places. What is going on? Someone was attacking the palace. But who? For a moment, she hoped it was her people, her father's soldiers coming to save her, She discarded that immediately. The men opposing the priests were using lifeless soldiers. That ruled out Idris. It was someone else, a third force, and they wanted to free her from the grip of the priests. Hopefully, her calls for help wouldn't go unheeded. Trelides and his men led her quickly through the palace, passing through the colorful inner rooms in their rush to get to wherever they were going. The white cuffs of Ciri's dress suddenly began to bend with color. She looked up with hope as they entered a last room. The God King stood inside the room, surrounded by a group of priests and soldiers. "Sesebron," she said, straining against her captors. He took a step toward her, but a guard held his arm, pulling him back. "They're touching him," Ciri thought. "All semblance of respect is gone. No need to pretend now." The God King looked down at his arm, frowning. He tried to tug it free, but another soldier stepped up to help hold him. Sesebron glanced at this man, then at Ciri, confused. "I don't understand either," she said. Trelides entered the room.
"Bless the colors," he said. "You've arrived. Quickly, we must go. This place is not safe."
"Trelides," Ciri said, turning to glare at him. "What is going on?" He ignored her. "I am your queen," Ciri said. "You will answer my question." He actually stopped, surprising her. He turned with an annoyed look.
"A group of lifeless has attacked the palace vessel. They are trying to get to the God King."
"I figured out that much, priest," Ciri snapped. "Who are they?"
"We don't know," Trelides said, turning from her.
As he did, a distant scream came from outside the room. It was followed by the sound of fighting. Trelides glanced toward the sounds.
"We have to move,"
he said to one of the other priests. There were, perhaps, a dozen of them in the room, as well as a half-dozen soldiers.
"The palace has too many doorways and passages. It would be too easy to surround us."
"The back exit?" the other priest said.
"If we can get to it," Trelides responded. "Where is that squadron of reinforcements I demanded?"
"They're not coming, Your Grace,"
a new voice said. Ciri turned to see Bluefingers, looking haggard, enter through the far door with a couple of wounded soldiers.
"The enemy has taken the east wing and is pushing this way."
Trelides cursed.
"We have to get His Majesty to safety,"
Bluefinger said.
"I'm well aware of that," Trelides snapped.
"If the east wing has fallen," the other priest said, "we won't be able to get out that way."
Ciri watched, helpless, trying to get Bluefinger's attention. He met her eyes, then nodded covertly, smiling.
"Your Grace," Bluefinger said, "we can escape through the tunnels."
The sounds of fighting were growing closer. It seemed to Ciri that their room was virtually surrounded by combat.
"Perhaps," Trelides said, as one of his priests rushed to the door to peek out.
The soldiers who had come with Bluefingers were resting by the wall, bleeding. One of them seemed to have stopped breathing.
"We should go,"
Bluefinger said urgently. Trelides was quiet. Then he walked over to one of the fallen soldiers and picked up the man's sword.
"Very well," he said. "Gendryn, take half of the soldiers and go with Bluefingers. Take His Majesty to safety."
He looked at Bluefingers.
"Seek the docks if you can."
"Yes, Your Grace,"
Bluefinger said, looking relieved. The priests released the God King, and he rushed to Ciri, taking her in his arms. She held him, tense, trying to sort through her emotions. Bluefingers. Going with him made sense. The look in his eyes indicated that he had a plan to save her and the God King, get them away from the priests. And yet, something felt wrong to her. One of the priests gathered three of the soldiers and then moved to the far side of the room, peeking out. They waved to Ciri and the God King. The other priests joined Trelides,
taking weapons from the dead guards, their expressions grim. Bluefingers pulled on Ciri's arm.
"Come, my queen," he whispered. "I made you a promise before. Let's get you out of this mess."
"What about the priests?" she asked. Trelides glanced at her.
"Foolish girl, go. The attackers are moving in this direction. We will let them see us, then we will lead them in another direction. They will assume we know where the God King is."
The priests with him didn't look hopeful. If, when, they were caught, they would be slaughtered.
"Come on," Bluefingers hissed.
Sesebron looked at her, frightened. She slowly let Bluefingers tug her and the God King to the side, to where the solitary priest and three soldiers had been joined by a group of servants in brown. Something whispered in her mind. Something Lightsong had told her.
"Don't make too many waves until you're ready to strike," he had said. "Sudden and surprising. That's how you want to do things. You don't want to appear non-threatening. People are always suspicious of the innocent. The trick is to appear average."
Average. It was good advice. Advice that, likely, others knew and understood. She glanced at Bluefingers, walking beside her, urging her forward, nervous, as always. The fighting, she thought. Several groups have been contending back and forth, seizing control of my room. One force belongs to the priests. The second force, the one with the lifeless, belongs to someone else. This mysterious third party. Someone in Teteller had been pushing the kingdom toward war. But who would have anything at all to gain from such a disaster? Halandrin, which would expend huge resources to quell rebels, fighting a battle that they would win, but likely at great cost? It didn't make sense. Who would gain the most if Halandrin and Idris went to war?
"Wait," Ciri said, stopping. Things were suddenly falling into place.
"Vessel?" Bluefingers asked. Sesebron laid a hand on her shoulder, looking at her with confusion. Why would the priests sacrifice themselves if they were planning to kill Sesebron? She thought. Why would they simply let us go? Allow us to flee, if the God King's safety were not their prime concern? She looked into Bluefinger's eyes and saw him grow more nervous. His face paled, and she knew.
"How does it feel, Bluefingers?" she asked. "You're from Pankal, yet everyone always just assumes that your people are Halandrin. The Pankal people were here first in this land, but it was taken from you. Now you're just another province, part of the kingdom of your conquerors. You want to be free, but your people have no military of their own. And so here you are, unable to fight, unable to free yourselves, considered second class. And yet, if your oppressors were to get into a war, it might give you an opening, a chance to break away." He met her eyes, then took off in a dash, fleeing from the room.
"What in the name of the colors?" Trelides said.
Ciri ignored him, looking up into the God King's face. "You were right all along," she said. "We should have trusted your priests."
"Vessel?"
Trelides said, stalking over. "We can't go that way," Ciri said. "Bluefingers was leading us into a trap." The high priest opened his mouth to respond, but she met his eyes sternly and turned her hair the deep red of anger. Bluefingers had betrayed her, the one person she'd thought she could trust to help them.
"We go for the front gates, then," Trelady said, looking over their motley collection of priests and wounded soldiers, "and try to fight our way out."
It was easy for Vivenna to find the location the beggar had mentioned. The building, a slum tenement, was surrounded by gawkers, despite the morning hour. People whispered, talking about spirits and death and ghosts from the sea. Vivenna stopped at the perimeter, trying to see what had drawn their attention. The docks were to her left, the sea brine pungent. The dock slums, where many of the dockhands lived and drank, were a small section of buildings clustered between warehouses and shipyards. Why would Vasher have come here? He had been planning to visit the Court of Gods. From what she could gather, there had been a murder in the building where the crowd had formed. People whispered of ghosts and of Kalad's phantoms, but Vivenna simply shook her head. This wasn't what she was looking for. She'd have to... Vivenna? The voice was faint, but she could just barely make it out and recognize it. Nightblood? She whispered. Vivenna, come get me. She shivered. She wanted to turn and run. Even thinking about the sword was nauseating. Yet Vasher had taken Nightblood with him. She was in the right place after all. The gawker spoke of a murder. Was Vasher the person who had been killed? Suddenly concerned, she shoved her way through the crowd, ignoring yells that she should stay back. She climbed up the stairs, passing door after door. In her haste, she almost missed the one with black smoke creeping out under it. She froze. Then, taking a deep breath, she pushed the door open and stepped inside. The room was poorly kept, the floor littered with trash, the furniture rickety and worn. 4 dead bodies lay on the floor. Nightblood was stuck in the chest of the 4th. An old man with a leathery face who lay on his side, dead eyes wide. Vivenna, Nightblood said happily. You found me. I'm so excited. I tried to get them to take me to the Court of Gods, but it didn't turn out well. He did draw me a little bit. That's good, right? She fell to her knees, feeling sick. Vivenna? Nightblood asked. I did well, right? Vara Trelides threw me into the ocean, but I got back out. I'm quite satisfied. You should tell me that I did well. She didn't respond. Oh, Nightblood said, and Vasher is hurt, I think. We should go find him. She looked up. Where? She asked, uncertain if the sword would even be able to hear her. The God King's palace, Nightblood said. He went to get your sister out. I think he likes you, even though he says he doesn't. He says you're annoying. Vivenna blinked. Ciri? You went after Ciri? Yes, but Vara Trelides stopped us. Who is that? She asked, frowning. You call him Denth. He's Shashara's brother. I wonder if she's here, too. I'm not sure why he threw me in the water. I thought he liked me. Vasher, she said, climbing back to her feet, feeling woozy from the sword's influence. Vasher had been taken by Denth. She shivered, remembering the anger in Denth's voice when he'd spoken of Vasher. She gritted her teeth and grabbed a dirty blanket off the crude bed and wrapped it around Nightblood so that she wouldn't have to touch him. Ah, Nightblood said, you don't really need to do that. I had the old man clean me off after he got me out of the water. She ignored the sword, managing to lift the bundle with only slight nausea. Then she left, heading for the Court of Gods. Lightsong sat, staring at the stones in front of him. A trickle of Blushweaver's blood was making its way down a crack in the rock.
Your Grace?
Larimar asked quietly. He stood up against the bars between their cages. Lightsong didn't respond.
Your Grace, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have yelled at you.
What good is godhood?
Lightsong whispered. Silence. Lanterns flickered on either side of the small chamber. Nobody had cleaned up Blushweaver's body, though they had left a couple of priests and lifeless behind to watch Lightsong. They still needed him, should it turn out that he'd lied about the command phrases. He hadn't.
What?
Larimar finally asked. What good is it? Lightsong said. We aren't gods. Gods don't die like that. A little cut. Not even as wide as my palm.
I'm sorry, Larimar said. She was a good woman, even among gods.
She wasn't a god, Lightsong said. None of us are. Those dreams are lies, if they led me to this. I've always known the truth, but nobody pays attention to what I say. Shouldn't they listen to the one they worship, particularly if he's telling you not to worship him?
Larimar seemed at a loss for words.
They should have seen, Lightsong hissed. They should have seen the truth about me. An idiot. Not a god, but a scribe. A silly little scribe who was allowed to play god for a few years. A coward.
You're no coward,
Larimar said. I couldn't save her, Lightsong said. I couldn't do anything. I just sat there and screamed. Maybe if I'd been more brave, I'd have joined with her and taken control of the armies. But I hesitated. And now she's dead.
Silence.
You were a scribe,
Larimar said quietly to the damp air.
And you were one of the best men I'd ever known. You were my brother.
Lightsong looked up. Larimar stared out through the bars at one of the flickering lanterns hanging from the stark stone wall.
I was a priest, even then. I worked in the palace of Kindwinds the Honest. I saw how he lied to play political games. The longer I stayed in that palace, the more my faith waned.
He fell silent for a moment, then he looked up.
And then you died. Died rescuing my daughter. That's the girl you see in your visions, Lightsong. The description is perfect. She was your favorite niece. Still would be, I assume, if you hadn't...
He shook his head.
When we found you dead, I lost hope. I was going to resign my position. I knelt above your body, weeping. And then, the colors started to glow. You lifted your head. Body changing, getting larger. Muscles growing stronger. I knew it at that moment. I knew that if a man like you were chosen to return, a man who had died to save another, then the iridescent tones were real. The visions were real. And the gods were real. You gave me back my faith, Stenimar.
He met Lightsong's eyes.
You are a god. To me, at least. It doesn't matter how easily you can be killed, how much breath you have, or how you look. It has to do with who you are and what you mean.
Chapter 55.
There is fighting at the front gates, Your Excellency, the bloodied soldier said. The insurgents are fighting each other there. We might be able to get out.
Ciri felt a stab of relief. Finally, something was going right. Trelides turned toward her.
If we can get into the city, the people will rally around their god king. We should be safe there.
Where did they get so many lifeless? Ciri asked. Trelides shook his head. They had paused in a room near the front of the palace, desperate, yet unsure. Breaking through the Pankal fortification of the Court of Gods was bound to be difficult. She looked up at Sisebron. His priests treated him like a child. They gave him respect, but they obviously gave no thought to ask his opinion. For his part, he stood, hand on her shoulder.
She saw thoughts and ideas working behind those eyes of his, but there was nothing for him to write on to tell her.
"Vessel,"
Trelady said, drawing her attention,
"you need to know something."
She looked at him.
"I hesitate to mention this,"
Trelady said,
"as you are not a priest. But if you survive and we do not..."
"Speak it," she commanded.
"You cannot bear the God King a child,"
he said.
"Like all returned, he is unable to sire children. We have not yet learned how the first returned managed to have a child all those years ago. In fact..."
"You don't even think he did," she said. "You think the royal line is a fabrication." "Of course, the priests dispute the record of the royal line coming from the first returned," she thought. "They wouldn't want to give credibility to Idris's claim to the throne." He flushed.
"It's what people believe that matters. Regardless, we have a child."
"Yes," Ciri said. "A returned child you're going to make the next God King." He looked at her, shocked.
"You know?"
"You're planning to kill him, aren't you?" she hissed. "Take Sesebron's breath and leave him dead."
"Colors, no,"
Trelady said, shocked.
How could you think? No, we'd never do such a thing. Vessel, the God King needs only give away the treasure of breaths he holds, investing them into the next God King, and then he can live the rest of his life, so long as he should desire, in peace. We change God Kings whenever an infant returns. It is our sign that the previous God King has done his duty, and should be allowed to live the rest of his life without bearing his terrible burdens.
Ciri looked at him skeptically. "That's foolish, Trelades. If the God King gives away his breath, he will die."
"No, there is a way,"
the priest said. "That is supposed to be impossible."
"Not at all. Think about it. The God King has two sources of breath. One is his innate, divine breath, that which makes him returned. The other is the breath given to him as the treasure of Peacegiver, 50,000 breaths strong. That he can use as any awakener could, as long as he is careful about the commands he uses. He could also survive quite easily as a returned without it. Any of the other gods could do the same, should they gain breath beyond the one a week which sustains them. They'd consume them at a rate of one a week, of course, but they could stockpile them and use the extras in the meantime."
"You keep them from realizing that, though," Ciri said.
"Not keep, specifically,"
the priest said, looking away.
"It does not arise. Why would the returned care about awakening? They have everything they need."
"Except knowledge," Ciri said. "You keep them in ignorance. I'm surprised you didn't cut out all their tongues to hide your precious secrets." Trelades looked back at her, expression hardening.
"You judge us still. We do what we do because it is what we must, Vessel. The power he holds in that treasure, 50,000 breaths, could destroy kingdoms. It is too great a weapon. We were charged as our sole divine mission to keep it safe and not let it be used. If Khalad's army ever returns from where it was exiled, we..."
A sound came from a nearby room. Trelades looked up, concerned, and Sesebron's grip on Ciri's shoulder tightened. Her glance hardened. "Trelades," she said, "I need to know. How? How can Sesebron give away his breath? He can speak no command." Trelades was interrupted by a group of lifeless bursting through the doorway to their left. Trelades yelled for her to flee, but another group of the creatures came through the other way. Ciri cursed, grabbing Sesebron's hand, pulling him toward yet another doorway. She pulled it open. Blue Fingers stood on the other side. He looked into her eyes, face grim. Lifeless stood behind.